call to order the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. Today is May 27th. We've got a number of bills to either have public hearings on and or work sessions. So let's get started. We, as is custom, it seems like here, when we have a lot of things to do and people coming and going, legislators, we are going to go out of order. We are going to be starting with the bill that Representative Rayfield is here for. And so that will be, we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3315. And Beth, if you could tell us a little bit about what the bill does while Representative Rayfield gets ready.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3315A directs ODFMW to begin on July 1st, 2017, billing other executive department agencies for costs of providing professional investigatory, administrative, and clerical services, as well as capital outlays.
Go ahead.
So my name is Dan Rayfield, State Representative, House District 16. House Bill 3315, basically the concept has been tossed around for quite a while. Currently in the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, they in-kind services to other agencies for fee permitting processes. When they do that, in essence, we are hunters, anglers are subsidizing a lot of these other fee permitting processes, and from an accounting standpoint, when we're evaluating other permitting costs, we're not taking that into account, and that creates a an interesting situation as we're trying to manage some of the budgets. This bill is an attempt to fix that. Essentially, what it does for the first 2 years, ODFW is required to invoice the other agencies for these fee permitting activities so that way we can learn a little bit about what those processes are, what's the scope of that, and the other agencies can kind of be put on notice this is the cost for these services. Then in years three and beyond, this requires the other agencies to reimburse ODFMW for the services that they are providing. That's essentially the entire concept. It's fairly simple. There's also the agencies required to present a bunch of additional information to look at the scope of the services. One of the things that we anticipate to see is a more judicial use of resources. When you're getting things for free, sometimes you might overuse or things might not be done efficiently. So when you have to start paying for these services, we also expect that there's going to be more an efficient use of the services. There was a discussion to go back and forth whether to implement the reimbursement period between 2 and 4 years. That was a fairly long conversation. Eventually, we landed on a two-year implementation where the department would be reimbursed, and I discussed that with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I asked Mr. Siebert to be here today to kind of, if there were any questions about the two-year implementation period. We feel that that is best. We also worked on a compromise on the ODFMW fee bill, and a part of that compromise is the passing of House Bill 3315 with the two-year implementation period. So I'd be more than willing to answer any questions, or Mr. Siebert, if you want to kind of address how the implementation might work.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Siebert, Legislative Fiscal Office. Just briefly, we would envision that the executive branch would have to coordinate during budget development packages and the affected natural resource agencies for the agency request budget process, and then those would be updated as the budgets work through the process. So for governor's recommended budget, they could be updated with more recent information based on the agency collecting information over a longer period of time. And then again, during the 2017 session when the budgets are before the Assembly, again, the same information in those packages could be updated.
And I guess the last note would be, as we work with Rich Angstrom and some industry to actually come to the bill that you're looking at today, there is some opposition from AOI who does want the four-year implementation, but as you'll hear today, if we're capable of doing it in 2 years, and as part of the fee agreement, that is what people are interested in doing, the overwhelming majority of stakeholders.
All right. Questions of the panel from the BEST subcommittee in Ways and Means. Go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. Do you anticipate, or what do you anticipate as to revenue generated, or have you done any of that?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, we haven't done any estimates on it. You'll see in the bill we're asking ODFW to actually compile, number one, what's their statutory authority and what's the scope of the work that they're providing, so we'll get a better idea of what actually is going on. So we'll have a better idea within the first year exactly how much that is, and even more so in the second year, although we could, you know, potentially, I think there are some estimates from ODFW. I don't have those.
I would just ask, is Brent going to, are you going to come up and chat to this?
I can if you'd like.
Well, because we're talking ODFW budgets, and they've talked to me at length about the work they do outside of fish and wildlife. And so I thought perhaps you would already have talked to them about what their scope is and what they see as they need from the general fund to, you know, to balance their books, if you will. So I thought you might have perhaps had some numbers that would be relevant to what they could anticipate taking in. But since you don't, that's fine. Thank you.
Yeah, and Senator Edwards, Senator Olson, I think when I look from a budgeting perspective, right now I'm looking at a permitting process which has in-kind of time into a permitted process in a different department. The accurate accounting method, and what we're doing is we're plugging general fund into ODF&W and the fees, which then subsidize over to this permitting process. The accurate way to account for this would be to actually plug the general fund into, if we believe that we should be subsidizing this permit process for public policy reasons, we should be doing that within, whether that's the Water Resources Department, DEQ, or whatever the permitting process or fee process that is in a separate department. And that's really aimed at kind of fixing the accounting of this. And so the estimates, I think we'll have a heck of a lot better information on specific numbers with a lot of the information that I work with Rich Angstrom on in the bill to request certain items that ODF&W provide for us in the future. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I don't know, maybe this is a question for Paul, but for your representative. Is ODF&W unique in the service that it provides to other agencies, or, you know, is this something that we see in other agencies as well? I understand the funding issues that ODF&W are, you know, is facing, which probably was a primary driver of this, but is this leading to a situation which agencies are going to have to bill each other for all the sort of partnership work that they do for one another?
And Chair Edwards, Senator Dembro, actually, that was one of the first bills that I the first bill of this actually was to have a more broader scope to, because in certain situations it does make sense to employ the kind of accurate accounting measures as in this bill, and other situations it doesn't. And I think it's a case by case analysis. The Attorney General's office, being an attorney, that is one agency that does bill for their services to other entities. But Mr. Siebert might also be able to give a more detailed response.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dembro, I'm sure there are other natural resource agencies that this is a similar type of situation. I don't know if their funding is quite the same. I do know, having done this budget for a long time, that this agency, because of their responsibility for fish and wildlife, they get touched by a lot of other processes where you might not expect a DSL to weigh in on a water right permit or something, but they're always, they seem to be in the middle of most of the natural resource permitting processes that the assembly kind of passes.
Yeah, this is not the first time this concept has been before the legislature. In the 2009 legislative session, I think it was, Senator Walker at the time had a bill that was broader in scope for cost recovery of all of our natural resource agencies. When she left the legislature and I took her seat, not only in our district, representing the same district, but also chairing the subcommittee, co-chairing the subcommittee that you now co-chair, she had left me with the task of getting that across the goal line, and so I worked diligently on it, or my staff worked diligently on it for months, and right before we came into session, we had a big sit down with all sorts of stakeholders who were on board with it the previous session, who were all not on board with it anymore. So sometimes the politics of different sessions change, and positions of support or opposition change, and At the time, we didn't have this big ODF&W budget crisis, which I think shines a little bit different light on the issue for this agency this session. So a little bit of my legislative history with this particular issue. So other comments, questions of the panel? All right. Thank you both.
All right. Thank you.
So we are going to – we're just going to leave that public hearing open, and we're going to open up a public hearing on at least one other bill for – in particular for – are they both – so we're going to open up two other public hearings right now. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2182 and House Bill 3188. And I'm going to call forward the representatives and the senator that are here, I believe, to speak to 3188, if you guys would come forward. And then if you could tell us a little bit about what both the bills do. I don't know if these folks have testimony on 2182 as well or not, or if it's just 3188. But I think a lot of other folks will have testimony on both, so.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2182 would require ODF&W to study the potential development of a comprehensive predator management plan, and House Bill 3188 would allow for the creation of one or more predator damage control districts, and it sets certain parameters around the petitioning process. There's a proposed -3 amendment which replaces the measure and changes some of those requirements within the petitioning process. I think that's what they will be speaking more to now.
All right.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Kathy McEwen. I represent House District Number 9 down on the South Coast, part of which encompasses a portion of Coos County, which is why I'm representing this bill here today. This isn't a work in progress. This started about a year ago when Senator Roblin and I were called into a meeting with some Coos County representatives, some local landowners, farmers, ranchers, timber landowners, trying to deal with an issue that had arisen around funding of the wildlife predation services that have been available historically to our ranchers and timber landowners and farmers down in Coos County. Douglas County became a part of this conversation because they were dealing with the same issues that Coos County was, came into a conversation, so we've expanded this bill to include Coos and Douglas County. Wildlife predation in ranching, farming, and timber industries causes damage to infrastructure, crops, livestock, costing landowners hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And it's a big economic issue in Coos and Douglas County and others. Historically, the cost of predator control was entirely funded by the county. But as has happened with public safety in our counties that are impacted by this decline in secure rural schools funding, Coos and Douglas counties have found themselves in a situation where continuing to fund these services that already exist has become problematic. I want to be very clear, this bill creates no new predator control practices. It simply creates a voluntary mechanism to fill a funding gap for existing predator control services that have evolved and are now a partnership, actually, between funds that come from the USDA, the Oregon ODA, ODF&W, and county funds that historically have funded this as a fabric. As the counties pulled away from being able to fund them, private landowners have come forward and after a year-long, very detailed process, have come forward with a bill that allows them to self-fund the money that the county is no longer able to provide to them. This bill allows for the formation of a predator-controlled district at the county level when requested by the landowners. There is an opt-out provision for landowners who don't wish to be included in the district. We've worked very extensively with Mr. Phillips from the Department of Revenue and Mr. Dale from LC to arrive at a bill that allows assessments on participating landowners similar to that of a fire control district or an ombudsman district. I think it's very important to note that this is a service that has diminished because of county budget restraints, and we have private landowners stepping forward willing to pay for the services and solve the problem on their own. I find this to be a very refreshing way to deal with a very serious issue that impacts impacts our agricultural industry in Coos and Douglas County. I think it's innovative, and I just want to acknowledge the work that not only have our ranchers and farmers put into this, and you'll have some testifying today, our county commissioners in Coos and Douglas County, our assessors, our chief clerks. This has been an arduous, lengthy process to get to this point. And what I would hope today is that the Dash 3 amendments, which is the final work product that's come out of this, could be adopted and this bill could be moved on to the Senate floor. Thank you, Senator. Okay.
Thank you. Representative, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I guess I'll start. Okay. For the record, Senator Arne Roblin from District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into the valley and Falls City and Sheridan. Again, Caddy and I started this conversation a long time ago with some local ranchers that actually a number of them were not in our district, but they were in Coos County. And since we represent Coos and then eventually Douglas was having the same conversations, we got involved with Douglas County. Again, both of us have part of Western Douglas County. The issue is, how do we continue a program that has been reasonably successful in keeping farms and forest lands available? A number of the predators, and if you look at the bill, it includes bear and others, do a lot of damage to forest land as well as the agricultural land with respect to eating and tearing up trees, especially after you've planted them, other kinds of issues. And we have found ways in which our county has people that get out there and haze and do whatever it takes to keep predators under control. We're not adding anything to that list. I mean, it's the group that they've been working on forever. We're not, you know, I've heard from different people that they worried that this was a back way to get into different kinds of things. It is not. It is about continuing a program that's always that has been there for a long time and having local landowners help take care of it. As you know, in our fire protection, there are a number of counties, not many, most of it's being done by the state now, but who have our own fire protection districts. And those people, not only do they pay a fee for that, they also are always there when you need help. So if you need a tractor or you need some equipment they have, they will be there as first responders to forest fires and those kinds of things because it's important for their production of the timber that they're doing. This is basically the same idea. It's saying we understand that the counties don't have the resources to continue to do this. The funds that have been coming in from forest and others are not the same as they were. The federal money is not there. They have to make hard decisions. And we as landowners who really do care about the products we're producing and the ability to continue our businesses are saying, we'll step up. We've come up with a number, an amount of money that they will understand and know what they are. They get to self-select to go into the program. And then the county can continue to do the work that's been being done of keeping predators under control. I think, as Representative McEwen pointed out, that it is a unique way of trying to come up with their own solution, not just asking the state or other people to take care of their problem, but for them to step forward and do that as well. So I encourage your consideration, and I hope support of allowing this project to go forward with Coos and Douglas counties so that we can show other people there might be another alternative rather than just turning your property over to the predators. And we will have a way in which we can continue to do businesses that have been around for 100 years or more in our county, helping themselves, doing the kinds of things that a lot of rural communities like to do, and that is stepping up when needed to do the things that are necessary. So I hope you can approve this bill, and thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Dallas Hurd, House District 2, primarily located in the Douglas County area. I'll be brief here. Basically, you know, it's the 50% participation rate is what will set this off. If the impacted landowners at a 50%+ participation rate, both in number of people and of acres owned, want this project, it'll automatically start going into effect. So it's driven by the people that are impacted. That's what I do love about this. As the good representative and senator mentioned, it was about a year ago when this was brought to me as well. I was running for my first term in office, but regardless, it was brought to me by my predecessor and some of the folks that are sitting behind me. I've grown up in the Douglas County area my whole life, and I can say that the safety net issues have become a very obvious problem to anybody that lives there. The funding is the funding gap is drastic, and so this is just one of these high priority issues that is not quite high enough to continue to be funded by our counties. And so we desperately need this change, and simply just a change in the funding mechanism, to be pushed forward and get to the Senate floor with your support. Just to give you a few numbers before I let you go, currently Douglas County and Coosa County combined produce about $150 million a year in sales, and that's just the sales of their product. It's not actually including the whole economic impact. You know, you've got tires, fuel, labor expenses, all that kind of stuff builds even further upon that number. So we're talking a quite a large number. If this program does not continue, if this bill does not continue, the estimates are about in the $30 million per year range of loss of sales. And then, as I said, there's greater impacts beyond that as far as loss of jobs and whatnot. I've looked at this bill. I've worked on this bill a lot, and it's hard for me to find a flaw in it. We're simply just continuing the current services, and I actually think it's best for all wildlife. The fact of the matter is, if we don't keep control of our predator population, you're going to have a huge impact on the non-meat-eating species that are running around in our community. So, anyway, urge your support. Thank you.
All right. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I might also mention that this did actually pass the House with 56 votes. And we do have Mr. Dale and Mr. Phillips here if there are questions about the details of how the structure of setting up the predatory or the predator control district occurs. They're the certified smart people when it comes to the taxation. It's not a tax. It's an incurred charge is the way it's set up, like a fire control district. And it was crafted very carefully with the county commissioners involved too. But they're here if you have any questions about the details of how it's structured.
Okay, great.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Wile E. Coyote was in my office and he opposes this bill.
And I will tell you, Wiley's okay. His brother, cousins, and uncles, because he's over in a different part of another state, but his relatives may be in trouble.
That's right.
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I would just suggest he put on his orange vest or stay out of Coosa and Douglas County.
That's right.
Yeah, Senator Brzozinski.
I know we're going to have other people testifying. The question I have is the sunset clause. Mm-hmm. I understand Dallas and I talked and felt that, excuse me, Representative Hurd and I talked and that it was 5 years, and it's actually built in for seven. I understand that they're looking at needing a couple of years to get this up and running. I'm wondering your positions if it was actually for 5 years, and then for us to kind of look at it to see how it's working, what y'all's positions would be on that.
Chair Edwards, Senator Brzozinski, I think I'm going to defer to Jenny Dressler. She's here to address that issue. I think there was a reason they extended it. I think there's some setup time incurred, and they wanted to have the full 5 years of the study. But I'll let someone from the Farm Bureau address that.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for the panel? All right. Thank you each for being here. We're going to stay on these bills until we finish out the testimony, and then we'll move on to other bills. So. Next up, I'm going to call Ron Hjort. I don't know if I said that name right. Dan Dawson and Bill Hout.
Thank you.
Three
mushrooms. Okay, I'll go first. Sorry. For the record. Dan Dawson. I reside in Roseburg, Oregon. Senator Edwards and committee. I want to first start off. I was one of the people that helped draft this bill originally to try to come up with a mechanism with our funding that we were lacking. On our farm, we raise sheep, goats, and cattle. Our predation over the years as it was real bad, got better, and now we're back into it's all over the board. And we needed a mechanism with the county funding lacking to come up with something. And so we come up with this plan, and as a rancher and a landowner, we feel it's a very good one. On our ranch, I use guard dogs, fencing, hot wire, pinning, and everything that you can do to non-lethally keep these animals at bay. But one of the real success stories from having this program in our county was we have a deer called the Columbia white-tailed deer, and that we are credited on these ranches, because that's where this deer lives, of getting them off the endangered species list. It's one of the only land mammals to ever be taken off. And it's because of what we do for predator control on these ranches that we were able to get this deer off the list. And we want to continue, you know, it's not only helps us, but it also helps the wildlife. And if you have any questions, and I'll be free, I'll be here to answer them. And thank you, Senator Edwards and committee.
And I thank you for keeping your testimony brief, because we do have a lot of people, and I forgot to officially ask everybody if you could keep your testimony brief. Unless you're talking, you know, about some more technical details of it, I would appreciate that, just because we have a number of bills and a lot of people. So, but thank you.
My turn. I'll try to be brief. Thank you, Senator Edwards and committee. We appreciate very much your taking the time today to have this hearing. As one of the principals that helped work on this bill,
name for the record, sir.
Oh, Ron Yort. Excuse me.
Thanks, Ron.
Oakland, Oregon. I figured everybody knew me, so sorry. one of the things that this bill does, it creates a stable funding source for us here in Douglas County and in other counties too, is the way the bill is written. It's organized by the county government. We've wanted it then in that mode because we think that's the best and most logical way to manage it. It's locally managed. It creates some funding so that we can match our federal funds and other state funds that might be available. It allows landowners to opt in or out based on their individual circumstances and et cetera. We do have a penalty in the bill for those that want to opt out and then come back in, so that we can encourage folks to stay there. It creates an advisory board of stakeholders, so that those stakeholders are definitely individuals that would be in consultation with our county commissioners and would advise them. The county commissioners of each county would hold the final say in the determination of the district. It does have a sunset clause, and yes, Senator Pergansi, it is 2022. Jenny can from Farm Bureau can answer the question, but my information was, and our intent was, it will take some time to get this put together, and the reasoning is that it's based on the assessors. When you send money or you ask for the assessment, it doesn't come. It takes a year or 18 months in order to get the money available. So that's the reason that it basically is started on a five-year basis, or excuse me, a seven-year basis. So it's that. We limit it to $1 per acre. That's our maximum. We did not want this to be a revenue issue, so that it creates a lot of extra revenue and it puts a burden on agriculture. This is a benefit to agriculture and timber as far as predation. It helps in the sideline. It does help wildlife predation and allows counties to create and support their own destiny. I don't know what else to say. I lose a lot of lambs. It's really discouraging to have predation, and I'd be the first to tell you I'm not out to kill every predator that's out there. We just want to have those that are causing the problems on our properties to be able to manage those, and we're going to have losses. I lose lambs every year. Doesn't matter if I have a predation program. I'm going to lose a lot more without it. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here. I thank Senator Roblin, Representative McGowan, and Representative Herb for helping us to get this far. There's a lot of folks that didn't think we'd make it this far. And we sat around my kitchen table, three of us, and created this, what you see in front of you. We're pretty proud of where we are, and we sure appreciate your support and hope that you would refer it to the Senate so that it could have a full in hearing, and I thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Go ahead, sir. Committee members, my name is Bill Hoyt. I am the past president of the Douglas County Livestock Association, past president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. I'm a fifth-generation rancher in Lane and Douglas County. I run about 300 ewes in Douglas County every year. We have watched the participation financially of the counties and the Wildlife Services predator management team go from seven people very active in the a whole county, seven agents that were very much able to take care of our issues both on private lands and dealing with all different types of predators, down to three. And as an empirical example, we lost 10% of our lambs were killed by coyotes last year. And that made a fairly significant impact on the bottom line for us. So this bill is innovative in the fact that it allows for private participation in order to fill these funding gaps. And I think that we're all looking, as we've all go through this building, we look for ways that we can be innovative about solving problems. And that's what we're about in this bill. And I think the bill addresses all of the complaints or things that might be negative very well in terms of how it is crafted. And I think that the lower line is that once it's in place, it's going to really help the livestock community in Douglas County and surrounding counties to deal with predator management. So I thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing this bill move forward.
Thank you, H. All committee members, you got real folks, the real McCoy here, testifying. They're not paid lobbyists. So if you want to ask questions.
They're from my district, so I'm fine.
Okay. Senator Deborah.
Yeah, I do have a quick question. So and I think I understand how this is going to work, but those landowners who are not paying members of the program, so what happens with them? Are they just going to be free riders from this?
And in a short word, they would get no services. Now, that sounds a little harsh, but the difference is it's financed by those property owners, it's private property owners that contribute. However, if in fact there are some state, federal, and or county funds put in, those people probably would get some services, but it would be on a limited basis, and it'd be based on a priority basis, much like your sheriffs do. They take certain things that are really problems. I would suspect that if there was a predator on a school district grounds, I, as a landowner, have no problem with the Wildlife Services taking care of that because it's a safety issue. And I would welcome that, and I think most of the landowners in Douglas County would say something like that. But on the other hand, I don't think they would be, since they're paying the bill, would they be willing to take care of somebody else's problem that wasn't a participant in the district? And if they wanted the services, they can come to us and sign up, pay the fee, you know. So does that answer your question?
I've just got one comment on that, Senator. Chair Edwards, Senator Dembrough, what we've seen in a lot of other cases where there have been private funding in this type, Lane County, we had a bunch of landowners got together. The large landowners who are contributing the most number of dollars to the predator control, all of the satellite landowners around that benefited whether they paid or not. And so that the predator control taking place on large units has a very beneficial impact to smaller landowners. Now, hopefully, those landowners would contribute. But if they chose not to, and especially if they were next to someone who was, it's very possible that they could get the service without paying for it. But that's the nature of the beast. There's nothing we can do about that.
No, I'm just concerned there might be some hard feelings down the road, but. Such is life.
Right.
Yeah, and we'd be the first to tell you there could be some hard feelings.
Yeah. Senator Brzozinski?
Well, since you gave us an opportunity, Mr. Chair, I didn't get to meet Bill earlier. So, Bill, I understand you run cattle and sheep?
Cattle, sheep, and goats. I hate to admit it. Don't tell anyone.
It's our secret. No one else will know. So what parts of Lane and Douglas are you
leasing? Headquarters is right on the border, uh-huh. The last flat place in the Willamette Valley where the I-5 drops over into right. the canyon to go to Curtin. That's where that's the headquarters.
Sure.
My great-great-grandfather homesteaded there in 1852, and there was a toll road. I-5 was a toll road in the 1880s.
Wow.
We were a stage stop.
Stage stop, right.
And so
off to territorial road in between
right.
kind of sandwiched there.
And the old road went over the hill to Lorraine Valley, and then the toll road came up yeah. where I-5 comes. And then we ranch in Looking Glass Valley and several other places in Douglas County. And run both sheep and goats.
Okay,
and
area.
There and cattle also.
Scott Valley area.
Scott's Valley. We just have some cattle down on Driver Valley Road outside of Oakland right now.
Okay.
And we're pretty mobile. We
yeah,
go
yeah.
where the grass grows.
Yeah. Know the roads.
There you go.
Other questions? I think that Senator Olson had a few questions, but he's not here. Well, he's not here, so.
You're off the hook.
Yeah, you are off the hook. He likes to ask a lot of questions.
The Wile E. Coyote one was scaring me.
Thank you each for being here. Next, we're going to call up Ricardo Small and Jane Miller. And I would invite you, because we do have two bills that are open right now. I think both of you had signed up to testify on both 3188, which is this bill that we've been talking about, but also 2182.
Correct.
Both the public hearings are open now, so you're willing to.
Okay.
It'd be great if you entered your testimony for both.
Would you like to go first now?
No, you may. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Ricardo Small. I'm from Benton County. I've given you a 12-page written testimony. The first two pages are really the testimony, and the additional 10 are exhibits. Is it okay to talk about 2182 first?
Sure.
Okay. The predator killing study that ODF&W would be asked to complete probably should have some funding attached to it, number one, for the study to be completed, given the budget crunch of the department. However, the history of ODF&W's performance on studying cougars was quite dismal, and I've got an exhibit attached, Exhibit A, that goes through some analysis and criticism of the cougar study that they completed, I believe it was in 2009. So I'm suggesting that the bill, if you approve it, should probably include some additional sources of information about predators, university types, maybe the Washington State Large Carnivore Center. I put a link on page one at the bottom to that center. Probably Oregon State or Oregon, University of Oregon would provide adequate scientific information, but ODF&W's performance in the past has not been all that great as far as the cougar study went. That's all I had on 2182.
Okay, great. Thank you. And how about your testimony on 3188?
Yes, sir. On page 2 starts my testimony on 3188. The way I look at this new funding source, it's to perpetuate the killing of predators by wildlife services. And I've put two links on page 2. One is to a film titled Exposed, and Exhibit B on page 7 has summaries or excerpts, I should say, from three federal agents and from Representative DeFazio. All of which are very critical of the performance of wildlife services. They're an agency that has violated numerous laws throughout their history. They've killed pets. Apparently, it's been a danger to people with what they've dumped out in the wilds. It's an agency that should be abolished. It should not be perpetuated with local funding. And I've also got a link in there to a 108-page report titled War on Wildlife, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services from Wild Earth Guardians. And they actually come out and say that USDA's wildlife services are a national security issue. because of their illegal performances. I would really hope that you would not approve 3188 to perpetuate the killing of predators is the wrong thing for the state of Oregon to continue doing. I really don't believe it's a great idea. There are so many detrimental impacts of wiping out predators. Some of the smaller prey animals, once you kill a bunch of coyotes, the smaller prey animals explode in numbers. And so anyway, I would hope that you would not approve this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Okay, we'll take both of you and then we'll ask questions.
Okay. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity to talk to what's left, the committee there. My name is Jane Miller. I am an Oregonian. I am a rancher. My brother is Tony Flagg, a CEO of United Grain. We grow wheat throughout Oregon. And I'm also director of Oregon Cougar Action Team, which is a voice for Oregon's apex predators necessary to transition us through a climate change crisis. I am definitely opposed to both of these bills, primarily because there's not enough science behind them. And I'll talk about House Bill 3188A first. I'm not seeing science here. I'm seeing preference that was made at a kitchen table. That's not science. It's a good start, and I appreciate their energy. But we need the Dr. Bechias. We need the Professor William Ripples. We need the Christina Eisenbergs. We need the science. It's right here in Oregon to work with these bills. Cattle ranching is going to be problematic in climate change, and I know this because I'm a rancher, and I'm already downsizing my herd in anticipation. It's not easy for me to say this at all, but perhaps it's time to take beef off the menu, because it's not good for our climate. We don't have the water resources in Oregon. Shortly, we're not going to have, we're going to probably be like California. We don't have the land mass to sustain this. These bills are not based on sound science. We have, the ranchers are saying they're losing $30 million a year if a species of animal is not killed. I have here from the Oregon State Police up here, millions of dollars lost in poaching. Millions of dollars, more than is lost in any one species of animal in a $30 million crisis. I'd like to see the stats on that, because I got the stats in the poaching, and House Bill 3188A is going to open up a Pandora box of poaching. It's not going to be confined to this little nice group of people. Stan Thomas is a trapper. He works for the federal, the state, and the county as a trapper. He's paid by all three. His bio is on the internet, and he brags about the money that he makes. And the money that he makes as a private entity, Judge Perry cannot even tell me Stan Thomas's EIN number to know if he's even paying his taxes. Now, this is the kind of community that you are introducing. They sound nice on paper. They sound sweet here in this room, but they are not. And I know this because I'm living out there with them. I'm rubbing elbows with them. I have grown up here on 7,000 acres in Klamath Falls that is now dry as a bone. I know what's going on out here, and these bills, they support the poaching. This is on Tuesday's newspaper, prolific, out-of-control poaching in Oregon. We do not need more killing bills. We need the science, especially now since we have a climate change issue. This, the drought, how many more counties are we going to get in a drought, and we're going to sit here instead and talk about, well, you know, we've got to pass bills to protect the cattle ranchers when the cattle ranchers are soaking up all of our water to begin with. And it's not sustainable anymore in our climate change. It is not going to be an industry that will last. They will put themselves in extinction, just like they're putting these animals in extinction. You cannot manage these apex predators, such as the cougar and the wolf, to genetic levels of extinction. We don't have a good cougar management plan. We don't have good sound science coming out of ODFW. I have been sitting here since 2004. I'm tired of this. I have been talking about these bills with a different wrapping on them every year since 2004, and it's the same bill. This bill is a wedge against Measure 18. It is not an answer to these ranchers' issues, because they can already hire Stan Thomas, and they already do. So why do we need a bill? Why do we need a bill? Our money, the taxpayers' money, is going out the door with the poaching. I have up here on the board the poaching. Total kills, this was just during 2001 and 2007, 1,738. Do you think those numbers have gone down? No. They've gone through the roof, and we haven't addressed it at all. ODFW does nothing about their poaching. They come up with more killing bills like this that really don't matter. They really don't address what is happening out there. They address the pocketbooks of a small group of people that are not that good for our ecosystems anymore anyway. And I'm sorry if I sound like this coyote guy, but I'm disappointed to hear you marginalize anyone out there, marginalize any human or any life form whatsoever. It is not funny. It matters. And when you've got boots on the ground out there with folks who want to have these sort of bills go through, and they're on your property and they won't get off, it's not a pleasant experience. Yes, there's going to be some very unhappy people out there, seriously unhappy. Please do not pass that bill. We need better science. We need more information behind that bill. We are not getting a rounded perspective of what's really going on out there and what Oregon really needs. Now, with regards to the science bill, that brings me right into the science bill. I started Oregon Cougar Action Team because I had a meeting with Ron Anglin about poaching issues that I witnessed. A lactating cougar with two cubs was hung by her neck and gutted, and the cubs disappeared. They go to the black market, both the Oregons and the cubs, by the way, out of California. And I went into Ron Anglin, and I said, you know, we've got a problem here. It was supposed to be a 15-minute meeting, and my husband and I began to tell him our experience. Immediately, Ron took over and lied to us for 45 minutes. My knight in white shining armor was gone. ODFW became a completely different entity to me, and I stepped over the threshold of that building and I told my husband, I'm not going to allow this to happen to our climate, to our ecosystems, and to our citizens. And so I started ORCAP. And it's been a struggle, yeah. I get laughed at all the time. You bet. But I'd rather stand on my own 2 feet and tell the truth about what I've experienced and what I've seen them. And I really don't care if they're laughing, because we've got to do something much better here for Oregon than what we've been doing. Governor Tom McCall would agree, and he was my family's friend. He would sit at our table and have dinner with us. I know that man. And what we're doing now with these sort of bills is not science. They're just killing bills for a group of small people who want to make a little bit of money and maybe be unethical. You know, Stan Thomas laughs on the internet on his bio about when he handcuffed a compromised baby cougar cub to a tree with handcuffs and laughed while it danced around the tree and left it as a joke for his fellow trapper friends. That's not what Oregonians want to pay for. That's not who we are. Now, this all sounds really nice, and they all sound really pretty, and a lot of people out there are good ranchers, and they mean well, but these bills don't reflect that, and we need to stop and communicate with the science. Right at Oregon State University, Professor William Ripple, Dr. Bechia out of Washington, Dr. Wilgus, Christina Eisenberg, she works at Oregon State University. She talks for the Smithsonian. She travels the world talking about wildlife predator issues and livestock, and she's a hunter. So we've got the science out there. And I am telling you, I am tired of coming home from a vacation, and within 5 hours, I've got to sit here with a bill that should never have been to begin with. So I apologize if I sound like a coyote dude. I've been doing this since 2004. And I'm seeing the same stupid bills, and they are stupid. And I'm sorry to tell you that, but I have to live out there in these communities with these bills. And it's destroying our ecosystems. It's undermining our watersheds. And we have a more serious problem than somebody's little predator issues. We've got a poaching problem. We've got a drought problem. We've got land ethics problems. These are the issues that need to be addressed. And I don't hear any of that here on these bills. I don't hear the science. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
I have a couple of questions. So could you connect the dots for me, Jane? You mentioned poaching many times throughout. Could you connect the dots between I'm not sure what you were saying about poaching. So
these
other than there is
bills,
poaching, but these
yeah,
bills would
these
encourage
particular,
poaching or
yes,
something.
Yes, they do,
so.
Because these particular bills encourage poaching because these particular bills encourage hound hunting. They encourage a lack of science and a loosely knit group of people. There's nobody out there monitoring what is going to be going on because it's private. Nobody is out there monitoring. We have a prolific black market issue here in Oregon of wildlife parts. Prolific. It's over $100 million annually plus now through California. And Asia is not helping it one bit. But these sort of bills don't have enough monitoring. They are just a Pandora box of opportunity for poachers. There's not enough monitoring. There's not enough science. They're out of control. There's two, and ODFW has so many killing bills that are not monitored, that are contributing to our poaching problems. ODFW is not taking care of their own problem. You know, and we have trappers like Stan Thomas, whether I like his ethics or not. We've got trappers that these private ranchers do hire and without a bill, and they never have needed a bill. They just hire the trappers and get her done. So this bill is a wedge to undermine the voter's voice and the voter's integrity, and it undermines science and sound ethics. It's not an ethical, scientific, or a respect to the voters at all. It will enhance.
My follow-up question is, so you're not saying that this is new program, but it would be a funding source for an existing program which you disagree with.
It is the same bills I've been fighting to kill these species of animals with every year. It's just a different wrapper, just a different number, just a different number.
Yes or no? This is existing program, but you disagree with the underlying program, correct?
We have a lot of killing programs. They are all reflect this. So,
yes or no?
Would you repeat the question again?
This is not a new program, but it's a funding source for an existing program, which you vehemently disagree with the underlying
program. This is not a new bill. It's the same bill with a different number and a different wrapper. Same concepts, same principles behind getting the job done they want.
Senator Prezonsky.
Yeah. I'm trying to, I guess, get some concept on this, Jane, because what I've heard, and if please explain to us, because it seems like you have a different perspective. What I understand, this program is already existing, first of all, and that because of the funding at the local level not being able to have actually using public tax dollars, that you have private individuals who are willing to establish a special district and that they are going to self-fund. So it seems to me that you're actually accomplishing taking away public funds that are no longer being used and won't be used, but instead will be using private money to actually continue the program that's existing. That's the first part.
Is going to be gone for whatever reason. Stan Thomas and trappers like him were already there working without that county money, hired by these ranchers and individuals to go in and do the trapping without the state, without the county, without the federal money. Because they only work about 7 months out of the year trapping for the feds, the state, and the county. And the rest of the year, they're privately owned. And they go everywhere trapping privately for these individuals. So why the bill? We've already got it. Why the bill is so that we can undermine Measure 18. That's what it is. Because Stan Thomas and all these other trappers have been for decades doing the job that you now want to make into a bill. You're just looking for a political edge to undermine Measure 18, which is a voter's voice not to use hounds to kill Oregon's cougar, and now you're looking for a political edge to undermine the wolf population, a very frail wolf population. That's what this bill is. Why do we need a bill when Stan Thomas and cronies like him are already out there doing this business without county funding?
I appreciate your comments, but I don't appreciate you, let's say, demeaning different people. I'd like to hear your answers as to how you feel. Don't categorize people, because that turns me off completely.
I appreciate that. I'm sorry. But Stan Thomas is already being paid, and folks like him who trap, without the county funds for decades.
Okay. No questions? Okay. I don't have any other questions. Thank you both. Next, we will call up George Houston, Dave Wiley, and Joe Rolater.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is George Houston. I'm the president of Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. I want to talk with you today about House Bill 2182 and House Bill 3188. I'll do 2182 first. A comprehensive predator management plan for the state of Oregon put together by ODFW is really a good idea. It needs to encompass aerial, aquatic, and terrestrial predators. We need to aggressively manage predation in the state of Oregon. There's an economic base to it. And ODFW is replete with a terrific group of employees and scientists and field staff that can get the job done. Over the last 5-6 years, we've worked with stakeholders in the state, from timber, from grass seed, the Farm Bureau, farm woodlot managers, hunters, fishers, cattle and sheep industry, to talk about predation management. And we've done some hard looking at other adjacent states and others on folks that are actually doing predation management in their state. Arizona does some pretty good work, so does New Mexico. But the state that probably we should pay the most attention to is Wyoming. The Wyoming animal damage management process is one that I think will bear fruit in replication in the state of Oregon and all places to mitigate damage to livestock, wildlife, fish, and crops by predatory and depredating animals and for human health and safety concerns. I would recommend that you pass House Bill 2182. House Bill 3188, a predation damage control district in southwestern Oregon, also makes an awful lot of sense. I would recommend that they add hunters and fishermen to the county group of folks helping to pick out the projects and fund same. Thanks for your consideration. Any questions or concerns?
We'll open up to questions after the three of you have spoken. So, thank you.
Senator Edwards, members of the committee. My name is Dave Wiley. I'm a volunteer for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, which is a national nonprofit conservation organization whose mission is elk, other wildlife, and our hunting heritage. We have about 14,000 members or more in the state. I'm here to testify in support of for Rocky Mountain Elk on behalf of 2182. We think it's a fine idea, and we trust the Department of Science ability. So we recommend support of 2182 and recommend it for your approval. Prey and predator must be managed in concert. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Joe Rollator. I represent Seafood Oregon, which is the commodity commissions that work on the ocean, the Albacore Commission, the Salmon Commission, the Trawl Commission, and the Dungeness Crab Commission. With George Houston, I've been associated with these ideas of managing things as predators when they act as predators. And we've tried several different ways to work with the department for single species management plans, and it hasn't worked. And so I sat down with Kurt Melcher and asked him to help me figure out a way that we could have the department come back to this legislature and say, this is what it's going to take for us to do a comprehensive predator management plan across all species where the predator management plan works with the individual management plan for that particular animal or fish. And so this is a study of a study, and I have to say several of my friends laughed at me when I first started talking about this. Why would you do a study of study? Because we need to know what resources are necessary to do this kind of study. We need to know how long it's going to take. We need to know who all has tried this elsewhere. Like George and I have both read the Wyoming plan, and it's a plan that's worked for Wyoming, but that plan is not going to work for Oregon. But other states have done management plans, and I'll give you a short example of what I'm talking about. It has to do with fish, of course. Lingcod and rockfish are two federally managed species. About 10 years ago, we discovered that productivity of the ocean has shifted, and both of those species were in trouble. And So we started doing single species management plans on the 27 rockfish species. We've got a few of them done. We also did a management plan on lingcod. However, lingcod really, really recovered fast because they start to spawn at about age 3. Rockfish haven't recovered as fast because the median age for a spawned hen rockfish is 27 years old. So we're in a situation now where there are single species management plan limits on harvest of both of those species, whereas the lingcod have recovered, the lingcod predate on baby rockfish. So those rockfish that we're waiting for to get old enough to spawn are being consumed by a population of lingcod that's already recovered from the low productivity system. And so the concept, that I agree, again, these are federally managed species, so it wouldn't work for the state, but it's the idea that when an animal starts to act as a predator for something else and it starts to limit its existence, then we need a different way to deal with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Each questions of the panelists? Any questions? Yes, sir.
Senator Edwards?
Yeah.
Is 3315 still open?
Yeah. Both, no, excuse me, 2182 and 3188 are open, and we haven't opened up 3315.
We started with that. That's Rayfield.
That was Rayfield. Testimony. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, that one is, if you want to weigh in on that one, too. Yeah, it is open. Well, it would actually save us time.
Yeah, but I think you need to at least put it on the record that you're reopening, because I think you...
I never closed it. I specifically stated we're leaving it open. So it is open. 3315.
Well, Senator Edwards and members of the committee, I'll take advantage while I'm up here. The Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation supports HB 3315A. And recommends it to you for approval. And we certainly second the eloquent presentation by Senator Rayfield and his explanation. And the big difference that between ODF&W's funding stream and the others, many others, is that the money available to it to manage, the only money available to it to manage is the license and tag fees. It gets a lot of other money, but it's generally federal or lottery, and it's got strings that prohibit it from being utilized for any other purpose. Recovering funding from services rendered on permits, licenses, not permits and application fees to other agencies will make that license and tag fee money go a lot further for management, for which it was intended and paid for by the licensees. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, you had also signed up on 3315, the ODF&W funding, 3315, the fee recovery,
yes,
or the cost recovery bill.
For the record, my name is Joe Rollator. I represent Seafood Oregon, the Commercial Fishing Commodity Commissions. Commercial fishermen like myself and myself have participated in the budget process at ODF&W for many years because we pay fees based on a percentage of the ex vessel value of our product, and we also pay fees for permits. And we have always been concerned about where our money goes and how that money is being spent, whether it's being spent on management of the species that we harvest or whether it's being spent on something else. And I think this is a really good bill because I believe it will answer the question of how the money within ODF&W, the fee money, the federal money, all that other money, how that all gets parceled out. And it will give us a better idea of how we can manage into the future with the programs that the fee payers want, the programs that the general public wants, and then programs that some private individual needs done. So I think it's a good bill. I'd like to see the time frame stay the same in the bill, as Representative Rayfield said. But we've all kicked this around for quite a while, and a two-year time frame on getting started is better. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Questions of the panel? Don't say anything. Thank you each.
Thank you, sir.
Next up, Al Elkins, Tom Wolf, and Jenny Dressler on House Bills 2182 and 3188. And I think Al and Tom had also signed up to weigh in on 3315.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm here to speak in favor of House Bill 2182. A lot has been said. I won't repeat it. This bill gives us the opportunity to build a predator management plan based on science, economics, and social values. And I think it will help us show that predator management is not a bad thing, but a necessity for all wildlife management. That concludes my testimony on that bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to enter your testimony also on 3315?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm here today to support 3315. We are a member of the External Budget Advisory Committee, and this year when we met, we found and heard that some of the biologists were spending, in the Wildlife Division, were spending 30 to 60% of their time on other non-game-related work. So we came to the legislature with a priority concept, and we were told that other bills had been drafted, and we support this bill with a two-year limitation. And based on what Representative Rayfield said earlier, it's part of the budget package, and we support that as well. So thank you. That concludes my testimony.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Tom.
Chair Edwards, committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. I'll first start off with House Bill 2182. Now, I'm not a—I have nothing in my wheelhouse includes cougars or wolves, so let's just talk about what predators I'm concerned about, just to get that off the table in case I get any criticism about wanting to kill wolves or cougars. But my group's not concerned about that. What we are concerned about is the large influx, for whatever reasons, of pinnipeds, which are seals and sea lions, and avian species like Arctic terns and cormorants that have increased in large numbers, and frankly are a major factor in the demise of both adult and smolts. And so we support this bill, and granted, it's a study, and nowhere in there does it say that we're necessarily, the study is going to come up with a plan that says we have to kill everything. A study could mean looking at other ways that manages pinnipeds and Arctic terns, but there needs, and cormorants, but there has to be a look at this very major problem that's facing the return of our salmon in the coastal streams on the Columbia River. So Trout Unlimited does not necessarily support the rampant slaughter of birds and seals, but sometimes we have to look at harsh ways to deal if there's no other ways we can deal with. So this opens up a study that could look at developing a plan of how we manage these species, and so that we can continue to have large runs of salmon that can be used by recreational fishermen, commercial fishermen, and just people who like to watch. And granted, we understand there's many other concerns of why the demise, why there's that are problems with salmon. There's habitat loss, there's dams, there's climate change. But this predator management of seals and sea lions and birds is a problem, and we need to look at that problem. So we ask that you pass this bill. We think it's a
good, Bill. And for the record, I never did laugh at Joe when he presented this plan. So,
I saw you laughing in the back of the room when he was talking about it.
Not at him, but with him.
He just threw the flag on you.
So, all right, well, I'm finished with that one. I want to testify real quickly on House Bill 3315. I have been working on ODFW budget stuff since they started EBAC over 10 years ago. I think that one of the biggest issues facing our natural resource agencies is our budgets. How do we fund our natural resource agencies? Frankly, with ODFW, the old tool of depending on hunting and fishing licenses because of lower numbers of hunters and fishers, there's less money there. So we need to look at other ways. And this is a very creative way thought of by Representative Rayfield. He's been very commended for this. So we support this bill. We support the two-year study first and then starting the ODFW to start charging. We think this is a good way for the agency to deal with some of their problems. We've also supported the license fee increase and other ways that the agencies can recoup their money, get out of the deficit that they're sliding into, and become the healthy agency that can manage fish and wildlife in this state. Thank you.
Thank you. Jenny, go ahead.
Thank you. Chair Edwards, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Dressler, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau. We're here today in support of House Bill 3188 and the -3 amendments, which came out of a work group process with Representatives McEwen and Hurd to try to find a mechanism with the Department of Revenue that to move forward with this proposal and allow for the self-funding of predator damage control districts. We heard about this proposal, or at least I began working on this in January when Ron Hjort and Dan Dawson came to our Oregon Farm Bureau Wildlife Policy Committee and presented their proposal, and we thought it was a good solution to an issue that's hitting many of our rural counties and our timber-dependent counties who are looking for new ways to fund some of these services that they have been providing. I think to answer your question, Senator Przonski, earlier, Ron did a pretty good job of kind of addressing why the 7 years was put in place while we're really looking at a five-year sunset in effect. So I think it was that this 2022 was meant to align with tax years and when money could be collected. And I'm hoping, if the question still remains, the Department of Revenue is actually here in the room, and hopefully they can answer that question. But we thought it might take approximately 2 years or a year and a half to actually put these predator control districts in place, and then wanted the 5 years to see how the mechanism works. With that voluntary opt-out, I think there's a potential that you don't have the participation that you would hope for, although there is a mechanism to keep folks at the table. So we would like, I guess, to see, if possible, that 5 years to see this program play out. But I understand, too, the question about 5 versus 7 years, and it was meant to be a five-year implementation sunset. So I am happy to answer any questions if you have them.
All right. Thank you. Yeah. Senator Przonski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to put on the record, or have placed on the record, I look at what passed out of the House on this bill, mm-hmm. and on 3188, it looks like it, A, modifies the definitions of what predator animals. So clearly it states that it's limited to bears, bobcats, and red foxes. Is that correct?
I don't know that it's limited. It expanded what predators to more accurately align with the USDA APHIS Wildlife Services, what they provide for predator control.
Okay.
I believe that was the intent of
that.
That
would be a broader.
So. I think Beth has some background information on that.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there is a larger statute that I believe this bill references with additional animals that are already currently defined in statute as predators.
Mr. Chair, I have that pulled up. 610-002, predatory animals defined as coyotes, rabbits, rodents, and birds that are or may be destructive to agricultural crops, products, and activities, but excluding game birds and other birds determined by State Fish and Wildlife Commission to be in need of protection.
And it also includes feral swine.
So
we have those?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
So for the timber industry, for the timber industry in particular, it's bare damage to their trees that causes actually quite a bit of economic harm, especially to the smaller timber producers. So
questions down to this end? No, this end. Okay. Thank you each for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else? Let's see. Hold on just a second. I think we might have everybody that signed up for 2182 and 33. Excuse me, for 2182 and 3188, the two predator-related bills. Everybody that's signed up has testified. Department, would you like? Do you have any perspective that you would like? This just so everybody knows, this has a subsequent referral that's been added by the Senate President's Office to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue because it is a revenue district bill. So that seems appropriate to me, and I, in fact, discussed that referral with the Senate President's Office earlier today. I sit on that committee as well, so I'll have a little bit of perspective to bring to that hearing. So it does have a subsequent referral. So I think we might have some questions if you'd be willing to come forward, Mr. Department.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. And the department is neutral on the bill, and we were just participating in the work group to be of assistance in the mechanics. So if I can answer any questions.
Yeah, actually, Ms. Phillips, my question was for ODF&W.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Before
I
you leave.
It was for the, okay.
Why don't you talk about how the revenues collections, and why, how much time it takes to actually get the program up and running so then we know that the program's running independently on the private contributions as compared to whatever funding sources it currently has.
Mr. Chair and Senator Przanski, having been on the Revenue Committee, you probably know that we're familiar with sort of how the assessor deals with that part of it. There is the section of the bill early on that says how this district is set up by the
petition
county.
And all
that takes time. I don't know how much time that would take, months, I'm not sure. Doesn't look like it goes to a vote, but there would have to be a certification by the county through the use of this predator protection district to the county assessor by July of whatever year. Then following that, the taxes would be extended, tax statements would be sent by, you know, October, taxes would be due November 15th. About 85% of the taxes are collected by December 1, the end of the year maybe, mm-hmm. And then they kind of dribble in after that. So by the end of several years, 100% is collected. So there is probably at least 9 months, maybe 12 months from perhaps the beginning of this type of district to where they're actually getting revenue.
Okay.
I was not part of the discussion on that sunset, but I'm just speculating that is how the mechanics would work.
Thank you for the clarification.
Absolutely.
All right. Other questions for the Department of Revenue? See any? Thank you.
I did note that there was no fur-bearing Sasquatch mentioned in the bill.
ODF&W. I think we may have a few questions for the department, so if you could come forward, that would be great.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, Brett Brownscombe, Acting Deputy Director with Department of Fish and Wildlife, and just here to answer any questions that I can answer.
Great, I do.
Yes.
Yeah. But Brett, I have a question about 2182, the study bill. So that was not a bill requested by the agency. That's something that came from an interim committee, I see. But if we were to approve this, how do you see this study of a study happening? Would ODF&W bring in outside people, or how do you think it would move forward? We had some testimony from people questioning the department's objectivity, and I'm just wondering how you would work to allay those concerns.
Sure. Senator Edwards and Senator Dembro, so you're right. This is not the agency's bill. That said, the way we would implement this, and we have heard throughout the legislative session related to the ongoing discussions over our, the agency's fee bill on larger budget, as well as previous sessions from constituents, concerns on all sides related to predator management. And so the controversy over predators is nothing new. The way we would implement this is the agency does have existing plans, whether it be a wolf management plan, cougar management plan, or other plans, and ongoing actions related to predator species, including aquatic as well as terrestrial. What we would do is summarize what is currently in place and take an approach that would outline, if we were to do an umbrella type predator plan, which is what the study of a predator, the study bill 2182 would have us do, we would outline the components that would go into such a plan. We would likely identify where we have current plans in place that would need to be covered under that umbrella. We would identify data gaps as well as areas of ongoing updated data. Cougar management, for example, we have ongoing approaches to development of newer data that provides for more accurate approaches to gauging cougar populations. We are certainly open to, and I would say over the course of time, regularly receive the same kind of comments that you've heard here today, that whether from those who don't like what the department is doing on predators, that we should be talking to certain scientists that they recommend, or whether it's a constituent who believes we're not doing enough on predators, that we should talk to certain scientists. So we would expect that would be part of the conversation. We don't have any, I guess, pre-design on a peer review process, given that this would be a study of a study. It's more, we have a minimal fiscal on the bill, and given the direction of a study of a study, we would plan to bring back to the legislature and constituents the outline of what such a plan would look like, and expect that would result in further conversation on the issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the department? Okay. Thank you. So, committee, colleagues on the committee, that is everybody that signed up for 2182 and 3188. On those two particular bills, is there anybody else that has not signed up that would like to testify? Okay. Don't see anybody. So, it's my intention was to work both bills, but we don't have the paperwork for both bills. So we do not have the paperwork for 3188. We do have the paperwork for 2182. So it's my intention to work those bills. So we're going to close the public hearings on House Bill 2182 and 3188A, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2182. So,
you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Mr. Chair, what are you doing?
Sorry, there's no amendment on 2182.
I know, then you're scaring me when you're doing that. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2182 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson has moved House Bill 2182 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion about this bill? No discussion. Okay. Last chance. Okay. Are there any objections to the bill? Seeing none, the motion carries. And is there anybody that would be particularly interested in carrying this bill? Senator Olson? Sure. Okay. Senator Olson will carry the bill, and we'll close the work session on House Bill 2182. And I will announce right now, we have some more testimony to continue on some other bills. If you are here for House Bill, and I apologize for not announcing this earlier, if you're here for House Bill 3382, the canola bill, it will be carried over. We won't be doing anything with that today, so that one will be carried over. And given the hour, I don't think that we are going to get to House Bill 3068 either, which is the DEQ wood stove smoke bill. So we will be carrying that over, and we'll go from there.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Are we going to be doing other work sessions? Because we are. I do have 5 o'clock.
It depends on how the I intend on having a good discussion about the amendments to the proposed amendments to the Beaver Dam bill, and I intend to we will not have a work session likely on House Bill 3315, the ODFNW bill that we've had some testimony on, but I did want to at least get some testimony going on that. And I think that may be all that we get through today. So,
okay,
just kind of we have more scheduled than we could handle. Didn't quite anticipate quite as much testimony on some of these bills. So, with that, we're going to continue with we're going to finish out 3315. Here, so let's have Peggy Lynch, Amanda Rich, and Bob Olison, and then the final testifier on that bill will be Mike Fries, and then we'll move on to the next bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan grassroots political organization that encourages informed and active participation in government. And as such, the League has been involved in the budgets for all the 14 or most of the 14 natural resource agencies. As a part of that, and having been a part of the Integrated Water Resources Strategy work, we were invited to participate in the ODFNW's External Budget Advisory Committee this past year. As a part of that, we learned more of the issues around this, around the budget and around the agency. Although we're not really fond of fee increases, we accepted the need in order for the department to provide the services required for our hunting and fishing population. But we also agreed that some money should be provided by the general fund. One of the questions I heard earlier was what kinds of monies might there be should this bill pass? And at least the current proposal that's on the table regarding ODFNW is to add $2 million more in general fund. That does not mean that that might happen again in 2017. It will be the job of the 2017 legislature to determine how the bills that are being proposed should be paid. But at least you will have the information to make that hard decision. It is not fair for the hunting and fishing licensees to unduly bear the burden of these costs. But we do expect to have a robust discussion about who should be paying for some of these services. I might mention that, and Senator Edwards, you talked about Senator Walker's previous bill regarding natural resource agencies. The League testified on that bill a number of years ago. We are supportive of Senate Bill 952, which is the task force on natural resource agencies to talk about shared services, to talk about efficiencies, and to talk about alternative funding sources. They all fit together as a part of this bill. So we encourage you to pass the bill as proposed to you. We think that it's important that the conversation occur, the decision occur, about how to pay for this in 2017, so we would not be interested in this having it go to 4 years. We need some answers, and they're tough decisions that have to be made, but you all are up to the task. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, vote of confidence.
Chair.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amanda Rich, and I represent the Oregon chapter of the Nature Conservancy. As all of you know, the Conservancy works on both terrestrial, freshwater, and marine ecosystems. And in that work, ODFNW is a critical partner. As a member also of the External Budget Advisory Committee, we, along with many of the folks you've heard from today and other stakeholders, got an early heads up about the budget imbalance that the agency was facing, and at that time decided to make it a priority for this session and frankly beyond, because we're not going to solve the entire problem this session. But we made it a priority to both in the long term and in the short term try to stabilize this agency and make sure that it is the healthy and efficient agency that we would all like to see it be. And in working through with my fellow stakeholders this puzzle that is the ODFNW budget and why it is facing troubles, there's a number of factors, and this bill is but one piece of the puzzle that addresses one of the factors. Other pieces of the puzzle include externalities such as folks who benefit from the good work that the department does, but are not license holders, your active recreational wildlife viewers, et cetera. And so there are, as part of the kind of overall budget package that you have heard about from Representative Rayfield and others, there are other pieces that would address some of those externalities as well, seeking alternative revenue sources from folks who benefit from the department's good work but aren't, again, kind of directly paying in as a license holder. And then this piece fits into the puzzle where we have an agency that is consulting but not the permitting agency and is bearing costs for the benefit of all. So without going into a long dissertation on all of the many parts of the budget package, we'd just say that we are in full support of this bill and also agree with the testimony you've heard earlier that we think it should come into its full strength within 2 years rather than 4 years, so that we can begin to see how it is going to play into balancing the full budget and the long-term solution for this agency. Thank you.
Chair Edwards, committee members, Bob Olson with the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. I'm mainly here to add our support for this bill. As you've just heard, this important measure would help add stability and sustainability to a overstretched budget from the department. It moves the ODF towards recouping the costs of certain services provided to other agencies. In the current House version, there is already a delay in the implementation. We would ask that you not increase this delay. This bill is needed sooner rather than later. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Questions for the panel? All right, don't see any. Thank you each. Mike Freese. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on 3315 that hasn't signed up? I don't see anyone. All right, you're on.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Freese, represent Associated Oregon Industries, a statewide business association. We are opposed. I think it's a preliminary matter. You know, I agree with what Representative Rayfield's trying to do and trying to fix a very challenging budget situation with ODFNW. He did work, I think, very well with us and tried to take in as many concerns of ours as he could. And the bill before you really is the work of from the House side on that. However, one important piece that is missing and one thing that we would like to see changed is that the implementation date for invoicing and requiring other agencies to pay ODFNW be shifted from 2017 to 2019. The reason for that is that the bill doesn't target all programs. It really targets fee-funded programs, many of which our members have agreements with agencies like DEQ for water permitting. And for those of you that sit on Ways and Means, understand that there's been a delicate balance struck between the fee payers and general fund dollars to fund those permitting programs. Those are ongoing, and in many cases, we, in fact, the prior panel and other panelists have been at the same table advocating for natural resource budgets to increase over time, because all agencies in the natural resource arena are in many cases underfunded. This does not create a new source of revenue. It's not intended to, I'm told. For that reason, though, you're only shifting budget problems from one agency into multiple agencies. If it does create a new revenue source, the idea is that it will be from folks that have to use our permitting requirements or permitting programs or license programs in other agencies. That is the impact of that is unknown. As Representative Rayfield mentioned, we don't know what the true impact of the cost to these other agencies. We just don't have that information. That is why we're asking for an additional biennia to make those decisions, and then to come to you and to the Ways and Means Committee with a better understood governor's budget to have that conversation and about what do fee payers need to be paying for. And I'm talking not just the hunting and fishing, but also the business community. If the business community is expected to pay a new or increasing portion of ODFW's budget, we believe that it's only proper then that we also have a seat at the on the commission and continue those budget conversations there. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions for Mike?
I have one.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Freese. Just a hypothetical question. Say, for example, DSL needs to have someone makes a permit claim to DSL, and they need to have ODFW review it. Do you think that DSL charges the person that makes the permit claim money to pay for that?
So if, let me repeat, Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, let me repeat this to make sure that I understand. So if an applicant goes to DSL for a permit, and ODFW then DSL has to go to ODFW to get their perspective on a specific permit. The idea is in the bill language that DSL cannot just immediately turn around and hand the ODFW invoice to the permittee. The question though is, well, where does the money come from then? If does DSL have it in their budget to pay ODFW? If not, then the question also is, and this is a perfect conversation for a policy committee, should DSL then actually seek counsel or an opinion of ODFW if they have to pay for it? One situation which we see with other agencies is in the Department of Justice context, where oftentimes we'll be working with an agency and we may want an opinion from the Department of Justice. The agencies are reluctant to ask Department of Justice for an opinion because it's going to cost them money. We're not sure that that's good public policy in this context. Will that disincentivize DSL if they don't have to talk to ODFW, even though it's probably good public policy to make sure that that the permit will not harm, for instance, protected species? So we want to make sure that those lines of communications are still open. I think ODFW wants also to make sure that those lines of communication are still open, but there certainly won't be if the agency being charged doesn't have the budget to support those conversations. Does that, I'm sorry.
Hello?
Yeah.
I guess the point I was making is DSL has probably done a lot of those, and they probably know that they need to review, have something reviewed with ODFW, and my assumption would be that they would have it built into the cost to the permit person that's seeking the permit, and then therefore, instead of DSL holding onto that money, shouldn't they reimburse ODFW for what they've done?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I do not believe that these agencies, the permitting agencies, do budget for that. That's my understanding in my conversation. So, and if they did, then I think we'd have a good indication at what it would cost to implement these programs. So, in my conversations, and I'm sorry, I haven't asked specifically DSL these questions.
And just, that was a hypothetical.
Yeah, but in my conversations with DEQ, I wanted to have a good estimate of what it would cost. But right now, ODF&W, they don't have a good estimate, so how is DEQ going to know? Because, quite frankly, they don't budget for it.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, Chair. Briefly. So just following up on that, so the concern would be that come next session, the agencies may need to raise their fees to incorporate this new cost.
Chair Edwards, Senator Denbrough, that's correct. We have been at the table and are supporting a 12% increase in water quality permit fees for the next 4 years in order to help bridge a budget gap that DEQ has. We think that 12% shows good faith that we are, in fact, trying to be at the table to do that. Now, we're fearful that 12% won't be enough now that ODF&W will also have an invoice on top of the current costs of the water quality program. And that could exist in many cases, like with DSL and removal field permits. So that's the fear, because remember, this is targeted at fee-based programs, not all programs across the agencies. And those fee-based programs, in large part, are what businesses help pay for.
Thank you. I think that's a very important point. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate it. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3315A. We're going to open up a work session on the Beaver Dam bill, and we're going to talk about some amendments. So that is, we're going to open up the work session on House Bill 3217A. And I'd like, so there have been some amendments drafted. Rocky, Martha, would you like to come forward and present the amendments that you have worked on and tell us a little bit about what you're trying to accomplish?
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, Rocky Dahlem on behalf of Sylvie's Valley Ranch. And I think generally, before we get into the technical amendments, what we're trying to accomplish is a pilot program where these artificial beaver dams can be used for stream restoration. And my original testimony and Martha's submitted testimony, the downcutting and incised streams and solving that problem by using ABDs to start creating beaver habitat as may have existed in the past. Specifically with the amendments, our goal with the Dash 6 is, following on several conversations with other stakeholders, including Water Watch and feedback from ODF&W and DSL, is to address some of the concerns about materials and construction of the ABDs, some other things that came up in the hearing last week about in-stream water rights. And I'll let Martha take over and walk through the Dash 6s and what we've tried to do. I think the important piece that we've focused on is maintaining a pilot program in the Malheur Basin that's usable and accessible by landowners to use their private funds to undertake this these types of projects. And I know that you heard testimony from other stakeholders about the outcomes of this project, that people have or there's demonstrated evidence that these ABDs are actually addressing the erosion of streams and the habitat. And so we want to make sure that this, since this program would be funded by private landowners, that we maintain that accessibility for landowners and something that's practical. So.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Martha Pagel, here on behalf of Sylvie's Valley Ranch. I can walk through the amendments or respond to questions, but would you like a summary of what's covered here?
If you could walk through the amendments, that would be probably the most helpful.
Starting on page one, the first thing that this does is modify the definition of artificial beaver dams, and also at the suggestion of legislative counsel, it combined what had been two definitions, one for low-profile structure and one for artificial beaver dams. It's now together as a definition for artificial beaver dams. And the main change there is in capital B on line 9. That is an attempt to respond to concerns that these structures would be so massive and that they would extend beyond the natural floodplain. And so what this clarifies is that for the portion of the beaver dam that's actually in the stream channel and passing water through it, no portion of that would be higher than the natural or the historical floodplain that you're trying to restore. Portions that are outside of that and not passing water would be up to 2 feet higher than that. So it just clarifies the definition that had been previously in the 3217A with respect to artificial beaver dams and low-profile structures. Then there are just some adjusting language of changing the lettering and the wording. If we go down further on that page, the next change is in the definition of qualifying stream, and I'd call your attention to line 21 on page one of the amendments, where we inserted wording to clarify that the qualifying streams, at the time that they begin work, they don't have either natural beaver populations or native migratory fish, and the clarifying language is that, and they haven't had that for at least 20 years, and this was intended to respond to comments that the bill should be limited to streams that don't have any historically native migratory fish, which would be going back to statehood. And the point there is that it really doesn't make sense to have a bill that applies to streams that never had native migratory fish, because why would you put the time and effort into restoring those streams to try to bring fish back if they never had them in the first place? But we definitely want to limit the applicability to streams that do not have fish now, so you're not putting any existing native migratory fish at risk with that. Moving on the next page, the next changes are to try to provide a little more specificity as to the types of issues that are to be addressed in the rules. And I would just underscore that ultimately what the requirements for these artificial beaver dams are going to be prescribed in rules that would be adopted by the Department of State Lands and ultimately subject to whatever they and the land board choose to put into those rules. But we did add clarification regarding using only natural and locally available materials. This does include rock, and that's been one of the points of contention as to whether rock materials could be used. But this would allow that, subject to whatever other details are included in the rulemaking. other new wording beginning on line 12. The idea here is that artificial beaver dams are to design so that they are unlikely to wash out, but they can wash out over time. And that sounds a little wishy-washy, but the idea here is to respond to the comments that came in that these structures would be so massive and create these permanent impoundments. And that's not the intention. The intention is that over time the stream will be naturalized, but they have to be strong enough at the outset so that they're not going to immediately wash out, which could cause sedimentation and other problems on one hand, and also that would undermine the purpose in the first place. So that clarification was added. Further clarifications. Responding, I jumped down to line 26, talking about the requiring the ABDs to be maintained for a period of at least 10 years. This is, again, to clarify and respond to concerns about, you know, the landowner's obligation as they're participating in the program. But we also added wording to say that they would have to be maintained unless either A, they are already functioning and the stream is restored, or B, if the Department of State Lands determines that they are not having the desired effect, then in that case, the new wording also clarifies that DSL could order the landowner to modify it or breach it or remove that if necessary, if they are not functioning in the way that they were intended. And that was, again, trying to respond to concerns that we heard. We added a fee to try to begin building up the funding for the Fish Passage Program, which is kind of the backstop here. And I underscore again, if you read the whole bill, even with these amendments, the intention is that there will be fish passage naturally by the way that the ABDs are constructed and the way the system is restored. But if it's not, then ODFW does have the ability to require fish passage. If there's funding available, this fee would allow that fund to begin to accumulate over time. And finally, in recognition of comments from Waterwatch, we added more clarifying wording to say that these ABDs could not be used as diversion structures for irrigation or other out-of-stream uses unless they were otherwise authorized under a water right.
Okay, so that's a summary of what the amendment does. Questions by members of the committee about this amendment?
I have.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, ma'am. You'd mentioned on page 2, line 8B, provide that artificial beaver dams shall be constructed using natural and locally available materials. A typical beaver dam that's already been there uses little saplings and all that stuff. And if there's no beaver dam there, how do you replace those locally available materials? Would you use like juniper or something to that nature? Or,
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, at Sylvie's Valley Ranch, the material immaterial that they've used is rock that is available on the ranch in combination with woody debris that is available. Part of the problem on the streams that are so degraded is that you don't have that wood available, and to bring it in would create a large cost and wouldn't have the structure wouldn't provide the staying power that the rock would. So the concept here is to incorporate both rock and wood, and then over time, as you're also doing upstream restoration to help bring back the aspen and the other natural wood that would be available for the beaver when they're reestablished.
Follow up. And what size rock would you be talking about? Because beavers typically don't move rock.
Chair Senator Olson, yes, beavers would not typically use rock. They would use mud and wood, and so the rock would be of various sizes that would be available to in sort of these small quarries that ranch operators typically have available to them on the property.
I've seen some of those pictures. Is that what we're talking about, those big boulders?
So Chair Senator Olson, some of them would be large boulders, some of them would be smaller sized rock mixed with mud. And again, these are issues that can be addressed in the rulemaking.
Thanks. Martha, along those same lines, so in the provision here about, you know, the washing out and the natural erosion, you know, it says that they're unlikely to wash out or fail suddenly, but they're also susceptible to natural erosion in a manner that mimics the characteristics of natural beaver dams. So beaver dams do wash out periodically, completely, right? Or near completely, and I'm just wondering how this would work. If it mimics the characteristics of natural beaver dams, it's hard for me to see how that the rock, you know, with mud would, you know, would wash out in the same way, in a way that mimics that regular erosion.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dempero, the concept that we're trying to address here was that these structures, it's not like building a dam that is for the purpose of creating a reservoir that would be a permanent structure. So the way that the rocks are mixed with wood and mud and other materials would allow over time for the, you know, a strong stream flow to begin to erode it, and over time it may erode completely. There may be vestiges of it, just as you would see in some places you have natural beaver dams that have been there for 100 years or longer, and in others they've washed out. It depends on the stream characteristics, but it is possible, and the intent here is that it would be this provide for that recovery to occur over a period of time, 10, 20 years, but eventually that it would wear down and would not be replaced.
Mm-hmm. The dams that are in place in, at Sylvie's Ranch have been there for a few years, some of them. How many of them have eroded out?
Chair Sandinbro, I don't really know, but we could find that out for you.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
A question that I just thought about and has been asked to me several times is, as these structures are built and kind of holds back the water but still lets it run, the question that was asked to me was, what about water rights users downstream? Are their rights affected by this retarded flow of stream?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, at Sylvie's Valley Ranch, there has not been any indication of any adverse impacts on downstream water users. There have been no complaints to the Water Resources Department. The State Water Master has been out to look at it. They haven't found that it causes any misuse or problems with the water rights. Ideally, or in theory, it may help provide a longer-term flow by slowing the water that you have later, access to the water later in the year. It's just moving more slowly through the system.
Thank you. If I may make a comment.
Yeah.
I'm supportive of this. This is an experiment. This is something we need to do to look to see if we can replace things that are missing. I do have concerns with the large boulders. To me, the pictures I saw were of ponds, and they weren't typically of, to me, a shallow flooded wetland. So I do have concerns over that, because if they erode out, it's going to put a lot of silt and debris into the water. But I like the concept. I like the fact that we would come back in and try to restore nature like a beaver would. Are we going to talk to a beaver and ask him how to build these dams? The question I'm making, I say that with tongue in cheek, but are we going to have a series of diagrams and blueprints to show how to construct different forms of dams and different types of water resources?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the idea is that the rulemaking process that DSL would go through would include specifications and instructions. There will probably be guidelines and different types of options, just as you're suggesting. And I'm sitting here knowing that that's a lot of work to put together those rules and put together that guidance. But the idea is to try to experiment, take this idea and try it in different settings and see what kind of results can be achieved. It is an experiment, but we tried to include enough safeguards that it's not going to be done on streams where you're going to be interfering with existing fish or other resources. It's in streams that are in really bad shape now, and maybe we can make them a little better.
So to clarify, could you clarify what will be determined specifically in rule by the land board, a.k.a. the governor, the treasurer, and secretary of state?
Senator Edwards, members of the committee, the rulemaking that DSL will go through prescribes the qualifying structures for either a general permit or a general authorization, and that would typically have some specifications as to size and the types of materials that can be selected from. It is a little hard to put more of a finer point on it than that at this point, but that is part of the way the general permit process works, that it includes the specifications for what is allowable under that particular general permit.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I read on page 3 that there's a $5 fee at the end, a one-time fee, which is, that's okay. What happens if the dam is not constructed as per specifications, and who determines that, and what happens if it's not done correctly? Is there any point of penalty or fine for that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the Department of State Lands would typically have enforcement authority. If someone for whatever reasons didn't comply with the conditions that are set out in the rules, there would be a way to seek enforcement of that under the rules or under their general enforcement authority.
So that would be through DSL?
Department of State Lands, yes.
Okay.
But there would be no penalties or fines or, I guess,
Chair
just the
Senator
expense.
Olson, DSL could probably respond to that more directly, but their authority does include power for civil penalties, you know, for someone who is not, you know, is who deliberate or with knowingly violates the rules. But for typically their structure is, or their enforcement process is, that if somebody innocently made a mistake, that they'll work with them to correct it, and it has a kind of an increasing or an escalating provisions for enforcement.
Senator Denbrough.
Thanks. Again, with the fee, the base bill requires fish passage to be paid for out of the fund, right?
Correct. So,
and if there is not money in the fund, the landowner doesn't have to do the fish passage. Is that right?
Chair Sandenberg, yes, that's correct.
So that for me is problematic, actually, that, you know, the question of will there be enough money in the fund to actually do the work, and if there's not the money, that the landowner is not required to, you know, to do it. I mean, I think we either require fish passage or we don't. And, you know, I understand part of the motivation is to motivate, you know, is to motivate the landowners to try this experiment and as a means of improving the overall environment. They are also, and I talked with Rocky about this earlier, that, you know, they are also ideally increasing the value of their property, which can become valuable in terms of providing forage and, you know, other values of the grassland, which I saw at Sylvie's ranch and was very impressed with. So it does bother me that the landowner wouldn't be required to participate beyond paying a $5 fee per dam. So I wonder if you could sort of help me with that.
Chair Senator Denbrough, it really ultimately boils down to the policy call and how far you push, you know, at what point does it become a program the landowner says, I'm just not willing to do this. The thinking here is that these streams are so badly degraded right now, and if those landowners do nothing, those streams are just going to get worse. They're not going to get any better. You're not ever going to have any fish returning to them because they can't live there right now. So the landowner does go through some expense. They're agreeing to monitor it for 10 years and keep it in place and try to make it work. And they're also in the way, there's other language in the bill that talks a lot about constructing them in a way that will accommodate fish passage or try to allow for that naturally. So in many cases, you won't need to do anything else. But this backstop is there that if you are highly successful, if the fish come back, and if the structures don't allow for the fish passage, then as it is now, the policy call is to say that the burden is on the fish passage program to come up with these funds. And the $5 fee is, you know, individually, $5 is nothing, but there's hopefully, if a lot of landowners participate, there are a lot of little ABDs, a lot of $5 that are added to the fund over time, and it'll begin to provide a fund that will cover that backstop situation, recognizing that in most cases it probably won't be necessary.
And in most cases, it won't be necessary because they're on streams that did not historically have fish. Is that what you're saying?
Either that they didn't have fish or that because of the way they were constructed, and when the recovery is in place, that it does provide fish passage. You don't have to do anything else. If this works correctly, in many cases, there will be fish passage, and that's the intention, is to be able to have fish passage. What we're trying to avoid is an outright requirement up front that you go through a fairly complex process with ODFW to get a waiver from fish passage, which would have, you know, left it out anyway, or that they are committed to an expense in addition to what they've already done.
Yeah.
So we also have the dash four amendments, and where do they fall short in your estimation?
I only had two pages.
And nor do they have a fiscal and revenue statement.
Yeah, so they were.
They tend to emphasize more the softer structures, I think.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Denbrough, I think that the key issues with the dashboards are that they, on the materials that are used to say that in size, scale, materials, function, and porosity and permanence, the big issue there is materials that this would seem to exclude the opportunity to use rock. Mm-hmm. And then the other change or difference, I think, is on that they weren't historically inhabited by native migratory fish. And again, that's sort of what's the point? Why would you go to this effort on a stream that never had native migratory fish? The idea is to be able to bring them back. But the change that in the dash sixes that you see would be to clarify that where you haven't had fish for the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm. And somehow miraculously, and maybe red band trout aren't above some of these dams, but somehow miraculously there are fish that have ended up that are now above some of these dams, some of the rock ones that are in place now. I found that interesting because we've been making some calls about, you know, some of the background on this bill and stuff, and so kind of working through those issues now. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, what the problem is with the materials, non-rock and mud materials, but those that are more porous and, you know, more woody.
Mr. Chair, Senator Denbrough, I think the issue really is the rock and the materials for two reasons. One is the cost to the landowner if you're not able to use materials that are readily available at the site, as in the Dash 6 amendments, and the stability that if you use, for example, willow bundles that have been suggested or some other wood material, it is more prone to washing out more quickly and less likely to get the kinds of results that have been achieved at Silly's Valley Ranch.
Yeah, Senator Edwards and Senator Debrow, I think one other piece is the maintenance part, where you have a dam or a ecology where beavers currently exist. They're maintaining those structures 24/7. When you put an ABD in an incised stream that's not had those beavers for a long time, you don't have that constant maintenance of the mud and the rest of the structure that keeps it in place.
That's correct.
All right. Any other questions about the dash? What are they?
Six.
Dash four.
Yeah.
Dash
okay. Senator Denbrough, how are you feeling about the dash sixes? I like the dash sixes myself. I know not everybody's a big fan of them.
Yeah, I'm not really comfortable with it.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm willing to give it more thought.
Okay. Sure. Well, let's do that. Let's give the dash sixes some more thought. We're going to carry the bill over because we don't have two committee members here, and I would like some more committee members here. So it's no big secret. I want to move this bill. I think it's one of those practical solutions that we struggle so hard to find. And it needs to be practical enough that people will actually use the tools that are available. So I'm sensitive to some of the concerns that have been raised, either by agencies or by some of the conservation advocates. However, other conservation advocates are in support of this approach. I'm definitely in support of this approach. It's just a matter of making sure we get the details right. So we don't have two committee members here. It doesn't do anybody any good to send this bill out of committee and then have to turn it around halfway to the Senate floor. So we will carry over. We're going to close the work session and carry it over to the next meeting. So with that, we're going to close this work session. Don't worry. We're going to carry over a bunch of stuff. So we don't want stuff inadvertently dying, although one thing is going to die on purpose. So we're going to close. Let's see, we were on House Bill 3217. So we're going to close the work session on House Bill 3217. And that bill will be carried over to the next meeting. We will also be, let's see, I've got all the, everything's closed now that we had opened up. So I'm going to go through this list to make sure that we don't miss anything. So House Bill 2182, we worked that today already. House Bill 3188, we are going to carry it over. House Bill 3315, we are going to carry over. House Bill 2453, we are going to carry over. House Bill 2474, we are going to carry over. I guess some of these are A, but it's close enough. House Bill 2474, we're carrying over. House Bill 2475, we are carrying over. House Bill 2910, we are carrying over. That's one of my favorite little bills this session. House Bill with the dash one amendments. House Bill 3068 is going to be carried over. House Bill 3217, as I just stated, is going to be carried over. And House Bill 3382 is going to be carried over. We will not be carrying over House Bill 3367. That means that it is the end of the line for that bill, this legislative session, but there's always next session. So with that, any questions from members of the committee?
Thank you.
Did I get everything? All right. We are adjourned. Did I get everything? All right. We are adjourned.